Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Late yesterday afternoon, when I saw pictures and accounts from Las Vegas with the players getting off the plane and then going into the Hard Rock and checking into their rooms, it seemed a little weird because I'm normally on the plane heading with the Boise State football team to games. Stayed back tonight to call the game with Grand Canyon, the basketball game. Coach Harsin had an impromptu press conference, and I thought, Chris, the most newsy thing to come out, which sort of was a denial, non-denial, whatever you want to say, but the question was asked about Madison and Rowe and said they will be game-time decisions, so we really didn't learn anymore. But the fact that they're game-time decisions and he didn't rule them totally out, to me, was the most notable thing to come out of the little press conference when they landed.
Yay, good news. I mean, we don't know for sure if they're going to play, but we know for sure that they're not ruled out at this point, which I guess is as good as you could hope for to get any kind of an update from an injury standpoint. That's, we've known by now, it's college football. You're not really going to get many injury updates. So to at least keep the hope alive, and Jake Rowe is such an important part to third down conversions. I'm pretty sure we could draw a parallel between Boise State taking off on their win streak and their ability to convert on third downs, and as big of a part as Rowe has been on that. Then in the two games against Fresno State, their inability to convert on third downs, and I have to imagine a good part of that was because Jake Rowe wasn't there. And then Alexander Madison, the numbers kind of speak for itself ever since the first couple of games of the year when he's gotten healthy. Another 1,000-yard back for Boise State.
And both of those guys, vital cogs to that seven-game winning streak leading up to the regular season game with Fresno State that Jake Rowe did not play in. And then, of course, Rowe did not play in the playoff game with Fresno State. And then Madison was injured in the third quarter in the playoff game as well. Now, every team has some guys that are bumped up that aren't going to play. But every team also seems like they've got a player now starting basically with last year, where players may opt not to play, even if they're totally healthy. Josh Allen, playing in the Potato Bowl, says he wants to play if he's 100% and ready to go. But, Chris, there are a lot of players. Christian McCaffrey, to me, was one of the biggest last year that decided, you know what? I want to save myself for the NFL draft. I want to save myself for the combines. I'm not going to play. We're going to have a couple of those this year, and maybe that list's going to grow.
Yeah, it was a Derwin James of Florida State. It was one of the guys supposed to be pretty high draft pick for Florida State, so he's not going to play. And let's go into the time machine. You mentioned those two names from last year. What did you have to say about those two guys?
I thought that they owed it to the team to play. You've made a commitment with your kids, the players, your teammates that you have sweated with throughout the course of your career. I thought they should have played. That was my opinion, and I know you disagreed with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think should or shouldn't they play is not a question that we can answer. Like, that's just not a question that we have because we're not in their position. We don't have that money at stake. We don't have the information that they have. We don't know how their body feels. We don't know those things. So it's impossible, I think, for us to answer the should or shouldn't they play. We can control, though, how we react to those decisions. And I feel like in 2017, you should have enough of an understanding of a player perspective, considering how we cover sports these days, the Players Tribune and the information that's out there, the amount of former players who are on TV and the like. I think we should be able to understand the player perspective enough to be fine with anybody who is not playing. And just recently, the Ryan Shazier thing, if that didn't affect your perspective on what a normal football play can do, I don't know what will. Like, that was not anything abnormal, what Ryan Shazier did in the football game against the Bengals a couple of Mondays ago, where he ended up being in the hospital. He's still in the hospital right now. We're not really getting many updates, which doesn't lead me to think that there's a lot of good news going on for what happened to him, and maybe that's an extreme example. But there's also Jalen Smith, who, unfortunately, just got back for the Dallas Cowboys and looks like he isn't too worse for the wear, but he certainly fell down some draft boards because of the injury that he suffered in a bowl game. You have Jake Butt, who was the tight end, for Michigan, who got hurt in a bowl game in the New Year's Six game, and I don't believe he's playing right now. Certainly, he wasn't in a position to where he was probably going to be a top three-round draft pick, and then he fell down some draft boards. So there's enough examples of that. to where you should be at least understanding of their decision, even if you root for a football team where you're negatively affected for the bowl game. Understand at this point, while fun, I don't really think an individual player makes or breaks a bowl game for a casual college football fan. I think it's just mainly content that if the game is close, it's something on TV, and hey, we get to watch football for one of the rare times for the next few months because the season will be over pretty shortly. Only New Year's Six bowls, at least in my opinion, are the appointment television. All right, it's this team versus this team, this player versus this player, this matchup versus this matchup. Get to a TV to watch. Even those are conditional in a way because, you know, the Rose Bowl you watch because it's the Rose Bowl. It really doesn't matter which of the teams that are involved. It's more the setting, the location, and the history of the game itself. It has less to do with the players themselves. It has to do with the context surrounding the game. So I am understanding of players who don't want to play in a bowl game because they have a lot at stake. This is their livelihood. This is what they want to do as professionals. And if this negatively affects their ability to be professionals, I have to be somebody who understands that.
I might understand it, but I wouldn't do it if I were them. I wouldn't do it because I believe I committed myself for the season to play for the team. And the season finishes with the last game of the regular season, which is a bowl game. I know maybe you have something at stake and maybe you can get hurt, but you signed up to play. You said you were a part of the team. To me, that's part of coming through with what you do on the team, and that's fulfilling your entire commitment, which leads until the end of the season, which in most cases is going to be somewhere before January 1st.
Yeah, but you have to have an understanding for context of what's going on here. Like, how many of these coaches aren't coaching these bowl games? Like, there's...
But does that make it right
well,
to you
it,
to bang
it
out
makes
on your
it makes it what the
teammates?
Situation is. It makes it what the situation is. These bowl games are an extra game at the end of the year where even the coaches who want to get other jobs are not even finishing
Willie
out
Taggart
this
is not coaching for Oregon. Yes. Exactly.
So, like, you have to have an understanding of what reality is. Mm-hmm. Like, you can make it an ideal thing. You should finish out the
you
season
should.
Because that's what you do if you're a man. You finish it.
Agreed.
But that's not the reality of the situation.
But you have to be able to look yourself in the mirror. I couldn't look myself in the mirror if I decided not to play.
But what about if you were a coach?
The way football is set up, it is the worst setup in college sports. Because in basketball, other than Bill Frieder, when Steve Fisher took over and had that secret deal with Arizona State that got fished out there and Bo Schembechler ended up firing him, deals aren't made before the Final Four is over. And I think the biggest reason is because people aren't set to recruit so quickly. Where in football, you either had the February 1st week that you had to have somebody. Now it's even more imperative with this year with December. So I think it seems like football is such a different dynamic than other sports.
Yeah, but why can you understand the reality when it comes to the coach's perspective? But you
I don't think they should
it.
Leave either. I think they should fulfill the rest of the season. They should agree to go to school X, but not leave before the season's over. That's how it should work in an ideal situation. Unfortunately, it's not. So I guess I have to live with the fact that people don't want to play, but I think less of them.
And you think less of all the coaches, too?
Yes.
You think less of a lot of people then, because,
yes.
Again, it's the reality. You
it
can't have
reality,
a college
but
football
but
program.
But I can still think less of people.
So you think less of the whole sport, which
yes.
is what it seems like, and you can think less of the sport or just accept it as that's what it has to be. Like, if you have a signing day of the 20th, you have to... Mm-hmm.
Move on.
You have to act on that. Like, you as a program,
sure.
You have to have the coach take over that program and accept
and
the
I
reality
understand
of it.
All that, but I could still think less of somebody for bailing out on a bowl game because it's still the season.
I guess you can do that, and that's how you can rationalize it in your mind, but like from the reality of the situation, as a coach, you have
it's
to help that
program. It's not going to stop anybody, but there are people that you think higher of or lower of based on what happens. And when somebody bails out before the end of the time, I think less of them.
So you think less of Willie Taggart.
Yep.
You think less of Chris Peterson.
Yeah, technically.
That's
the season's finished.
Man.
Yeah. Now, maybe the school says go ahead and go, and they make that choice, but a lot of times they didn't.
Like I can't expect the coach to stay throughout the entire season. I think that might that's like bad personally for the coach. It might be negative for the program itself too. Like I do think you can't.
You think Scott Frost should be gone? You think he should leave right now?
Because if you're the coach in Nebraska, you gotta like that's your job now. Like that you have to coach the Nebraska program because if you want to move up the coaching ladder, unfortunately, there has to be a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And while, again, if you had to design college football from the ground floor, yeah, maybe you change some of the dates, like you make it so none of this happens during the coaching cycle. But it happens during the coaching cycle, just like there is a risk every time you take the college football a football field to play, and the players have to evaluate that risk and what do you have to gain by this bowl game. Now, for the situation of guys like on Oregon, we're talking like Royce Freeman, for example, the running back, like there probably is something to gain from having a strong bowl game when you are not a bona fide first round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody like Josh Allen, I don't know what he specifically has to gain, because we've seen, like, the more he plays with Wyoming, the tougher mm-hmm. it is for him to move the ball. So it's hard for him to show off his skills when the supporting cast is this weak. So I don't know what one game in a bowl setting he can really show that he hasn't shown so far. And he was supposed to be a first-round pick anyway. But, like, even guys like Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, even though Rosen's one of the guys who's questionable to play, we're not sure what he'll do.
I can't believe that Rosen's going to help his case against K-State whatsoever.
Yeah.
You're looking at it from sheer stock market up and down. Probably none of those guys. Darnold's probably not going to help himself. Freeman might. If he goes for 200 yards and looks great, he might help himself. I can't believe that you're going to change your opinion on Darnold or Rosen based on one game, either whether they throw for 450 yards or they get picked off five times.
That's fair. Like, for example, you might think less of Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's crying in his soup right now. Like, it doesn't matter. He was
selected
with the first round.
But I could think less or better of somebody no matter what. It's how I feel about him.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette. I mean, I'm sure
I thought less of Leonard Fournette. Yes.
But everybody else, even though he's the first, was he, top five draft pick, and out here might win the rookie of the year in the NFL. Like, at a certain point, reality.
But it's all whatever your opinion is. And if you think it's, you know, I just didn't think it was the right thing to do. So I didn't think as highly of them as I did before. After the fifth annual Idaho Potato Drop, sponsored by the Idaho Potato Commission on New Year's Eve, don't drive home. Stay at the Hyatt, which is right next to the festivities. For more information, hit idahopotatodrop.com. It's designed by Key Design Websites and Totally Boise Online. And it's brought to you by Sports Radio, The Ticket. Up next, we're going to find out how Oregon is poised to move forward with 2018. Joey McMurray, their sideline announcer for football and play-by-play announcer for basketball, joins us next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Boise State and Oregon coming up on Saturday. And when we look over the last 10 years, there haven't been a whole lot of meetings in the marquee sports between Boise State and Oregon. There have been three on the basketball court, two on the football field, and all of them have been just tremendous games that have gone right down to the wire. Joey McMurray has been there for, I don't know, Joey, some of them, most of them, or all of them. He is the play-by-play announcer now for Oregon basketball, sideline announcer for football. We haven't had a lot of matchups, Joey, but they've been good ones.
Yeah, they have. I still remember the infamous punch with LeGarrette Blount. I think a lot of people remember that one. So on the gridiron, yeah, as you guys alluded to, 0-2 for the Ducks against Boise State. But basketball has actually won the hardwood battle the last 3 years now. I remember that great game at Boise State at Taco Bell Arena a couple years ago, and then tough one last year. And then I'm sure you guys have talked a lot about the half-court shot ending the Ducks' 46-game home win streak. So, yeah, there's been some good ones. I've been to most of them the last few years.
Yeah, and since you brought it up, let's go to that right now, because I just wanted to kind of highlight the dynamic of the difference of the radio calls, because it's just fun to see the difference of perspective of when that half-court shot went in from Lexus Williams. This is what it sounded like when Bob was calling it.
Smith inbounds to Pritchard. Pritchard into the paint. Goes to the left, goes to the layup, gets it. 3 seconds left on the drive. Pritchard with the underhand shot. 1 second left, half court, Lexus Williams. Got it! Lexus Williams! It's a half court shot! And the Broncos have stopped a 46-game win streak at home by the Ducks!
Okay, so there's an element of excitement right there, Bob?
I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10 for me, that was probably about a 12.
But there's always the other side of it when the buzzer beater goes in for the other team. Now, this was the call from Joey the other day.
Pritchard brings it up for Oregon. He attacks to the basket. Goes up and in! 3.1 on the clock. Ducks got to play defense. Tied at 70. Midcourt shot for Williams. He hits it!
It's just so funny to hear the stun in your voice versus the elation in Bob's voice. But that's play-by-play, right?
It is, and it's always fun. I actually, you know, it's funny. I used to do a segment on my show a little while ago. We used to do a kind of winner and loser radio. It'd be like, what did it sound like on the on the other side of things? I've always had fun with that. No, that was a heck of a shot. And, you know, the funny thing was when I afterwards, what you didn't hear afterwards is I just looked at Jerry and I was like, well, if there's going to be a way to end a 46-game home win streak, that's the way to do it. And that's the truth.
And then, Joey, I want to ask you, and we're visiting with Joey McMurray, who is the voice of Oregon basketball sideline announcer for football on their IMG network. Thanks for the clip. What did it look like? Because you were behind the play. I was in front of the play. I saw him dribbling towards me, let it go, and I had to kind of turn and see the ball fly there. You would have been just the opposite. You would have had everything pretty much in your view without having to turn, correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, for Oregon anyway, when he let it go, I kind of had a feeling it was going in. It just you guys have seen him before when you're behind him and you just see that sweet shot and it just looks perfect on the way. And I knew it was online when he let it go, and so that was what was kind of, uh-oh. And he made it. Heck of a shot, heck of a play. And you know, it's amazing to me to kind of think back on it now that there's been a couple of those actually at Matthew Knight Arena, and this is the first one that I can think of that's gone against Oregon, actually, since I've been around the last, 7 years now. I can't think of very many at Matthew Knight Arena that have been half-court buzzer beaters that have hurt the Ducks rather than help them.
Well, Boise State will certainly take that. And I guess shifting priorities here now to the football game, the Las Vegas Bowl coming up on Saturday. Royce Freeman, Terrell Crosby, a couple of players who are, I guess, questionable is the best way to say it. Will they play? Won't they play? What difference does it make, I think, is probably the bigger question among them all.
Yeah, I think that all those guys, those two guys in particular, are really struggling with their decisions. It seems like they've both been going through practice, I can tell you that. They've both still been suiting up, going through practice. Tyrell Crosby's been meeting with the media, doing the whole thing. And it would be a big hit, I think, to Oregon, particularly if Tyrell Crosby doesn't play. I get asked a lot who's the best football player on this team, and I've routinely said Tyrell Crosby. I mean, Pro Football Focus grades him as one of, if not the best, tackles in the country. I think he's a first-round draft pick. I think he's going to be a great NFL player. He just has all the makeup and physically and both off and off the field as well. So I think not having Tyrell Crosby really hurts Oregon because Calvin Throckmorton has graded really well as a tackle also, but he's played on the right side for much of his career. Mario Cristobal's called him the most versatile offensive lineman on the team, but as you guys have probably talked about before, you know, when you're on the right side and then all of a sudden you're on the left side, it's like learning how to dribble with the left hand when you've only ever dribbled with the right hand. And so it really is a true flip in a lot of different things fundamentally. So I don't know what the Ducks would do with that left tackle spot. Do you put Calvin Throckmorton at left tackle and then slide in a guy like Brady Aiello at right tackle, or do you put Aiello at left tackle? He's practiced there a lot. Yeah, and it's going to be a hit to the blind side for Justin Herbert if Tyrell Crosby doesn't go. So we'll see. I have a feeling that Tyrell Crosby is probably going to try and play. Maybe he doesn't play the whole game. You know, I mean, I've seen some people speculate about that where maybe, you know, he and Royce Freeman, they play a little bit and then they kind of get their curtain call, if you will. And for Tyrell Crosby, it'd be cool. Obviously, he's from near the Las Vegas area, so that'd be kind of cool for him. I think that losing Tyrell Crosby could be huge because Justin Herbert has always had him guarding his blind side, and Justin Herbert's never been shy about saying how much he's appreciated having Tyrell Crosby look out for him.
What's the thought moving forward for the Ducks, Joey, looking forward to the regime of Mario Cristobal and the recruiting class talk there? Are they going to be able to save most of what they had down? And what are the prognostications for the Ducks in 2018?
Yeah, Mario Cristobal has been known as a great recruiter his whole career, and I think that that's going to be a huge focus. He's a guy that really always talks about integrity. You'll never really hear him take credit for anything. He always just gives credit to the student athletes and the players, and I think that was something that really stuck out to Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullins in elevating him to the position of head coach. I think that the future is bright, and he really is going to try and have the Ducks be a physical, downhill running kind of team. And it's so funny because even a decade ago, and when Chip Kelly was the head coach, I feel like Oregon always got labeled with that kind of finesse and speed team, and they were never labeled as a physical team. And now all of a sudden, that's really what Coach Cristobal wants them to be, is physical, downhill running. And that's really how Oregon, I think, has built its success the last decade, and really even more than a decade now, is being able to run the ball with this spread offense. And I think that he's going to continue that. And I think that off the field, the players love him. I mean, they were all aboard the Mario Cristobal train when they found out from athletic director Rob Mullins that Mario Cristobal was going to be up for the job. They really went at it on social media and voiced their love for Coach Cristobal. And they had the hashtag Cristobalin or Cristobalin, I guess, depends on how you want to pronounce it. And they've really gone all aboard with him. So I think that that it's a lot of positivity. And in terms of recruiting, I think it will be interesting to see how the Ducks do for the next few days because, you know, guys, I really think this early signing period that they've added for football has really changed the way that the coaching landscape and the coaching carousel operates because it's so much more accelerated. And so I think it's a positive for the Ducks, at least. And I guess we'll find out on December 20th how much of a positive it is. But I think it's a positive to try and maintain some of that stability to hopefully get a bunch of guys to sign on that December 20th date.
I'm looking forward to just seeing what percentage actually sign. To me, this is the first time they've done it. Are 60% of what's committed to schools out there? I don't mean just at Oregon and Boise State. I'm talking nationally. What percent is going to sign?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and it's one that I've talked with a lot of the guys from 24/7 Sports about. We've got a guy, Matt Preem, here that covers recruiting, and he's really always the guy that I talk to because, Bob, I'm sure you're in a similar position to me where we can't talk about recruits because of our connection to the athletic department until they actually send in their national letter of intent. And so it's always kind of walking on eggshells for me with recruiting. And I've actually asked Matt that question, you know, what is the percentage going to be? And I've talked to some of the other recruiting gurus around here, and they do think it's going to be somewhere between 60 and 70% of student athletes that sign because so many student athletes, I think, are one going to be pressured by universities to sign on that dotted line. And so I think that that's part of it. And then the other side is I've always heard from student athletes that the stress of signing day when they're coming off of their Christmas break and they're trying to make their decision, they're also trying to make sure that they stay up with their studies. There's a lot of stress, and a lot of them have said that they'd rather just get it over with sooner than later. So I do think it's going to be more than half of the really D1-type players that are going to sign by that date. But only time will tell. I think that it's kind of an interesting, I don't know if experiment's the right word, but it's certainly an interesting development with how college football is going to be handled recruiting-wise for the next few years.
Joey McMurray joining us sidelines for Oregon football, also does the play-by-play for basketball. And on that note, while we're talking future and have that kind of perspective with it, one of the things I'm intrigued about with Oregon, like what is considered the baseline for like a four-year successful period? Like what would it be? How many conference championships? How many wins? Like over a four-year period, what is the baseline for a successful stint with Oregon?
Well, I think that when Rob Mullins hit the reset button with getting rid of the longtime staff and moving in a different direction with Coach Taggart, I think that he anticipated in 4 years from last December, he wanted them to be back competing, not just for a Pac-12 title, but for a national title. And he's never shy about that. Rob Mullins has always said, you know, we do expect to be competing for not just Pac-12 championships, but national championships. And so I think that for this staff and really for Oregon football in general to be viewed as a success, not just necessarily in the fan base, but even in the walls of the Casanova Center and the Mashofsky Center and the Hatfield-Dowling Complex here on the Oregon campus, I think that you've got to be at least in the conversation for not just a Pac-12 title, but maybe a national title as well. And so if the Ducks can do that in the next 3-4 years, then I think Coach Cristobal has done a good job. And really, I think that Coach Taggart has done a good job with what he started. One of the things that's going to be interesting for me is what kind of is the legacy of Willie Taggart after he was here for a year, and how many of the assistants stay with Coach Cristobal that were brought in by Willie Taggart, and that's going to have a lot to do with how much success the Ducks have. But I do think that Rob Mullins is always very upfront. He wants them to be competing for Pac-12 and national titles probably in at least once in that four-year period.
Joey, thanks so much for your time. Good seeing you when we were over there, and look forward to hopefully maybe some more future matchups, especially if they end as well as the last three have been for basketball. They have been just beauties down to the wire.
Hey, I'm all aboard that train. I'd like to see Boise State get on the schedule more and more. And I got to say before I go, I'm excited to see what happens with Boise State baseball. I'm hoping that Oregon and Boise State get on the baseball diamond together the next few years as well.
I had heard that the schedule was being talked about for some non-conference games, so that would be excellent again. 2020, the start date for Boise State baseball.
Excellent. Well, thanks, guys. Good luck out there in Vegas.
All right. Good luck to you guys as well. Joey McMurray. Nice call, I thought he had.
It wasn't like the world ended when the ball went in the basket.
It is a big difference in perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not, the world's coming down. Yeah. He had an element of excitement to it, but you could also hear the devastation in the voice. Well, it went. And I would be interested, again, to hear, the following 5 seconds. Was there just, stunned silence or, what was the element of disappointment in the voices for the next 5 seconds?
Or just ecstasy and joy on the other side. Yeah. So, you do enough games, you're going to have both that you're going to get to talk about. And you always remember the good ones more than the ones that don't go in for you. Join Caves and Prater. Speaking of recruiting, they'll be at Dave and Buster's on Wednesday the 20th from 3 until 6 for a special Boise State football Letter of Intent Day show. It's the early commits edition. Come on down and listen to the recruits who commit early being interviewed with hardcore Bronco fans there. Food and drink specials and prizes as well. It's the 21st annual Letter of Intent Day special show, a recruiting tradition that this year is going to be moved to mid-December, December 20th, and I'm sure there'll be a second recruiting show as well on February to pick up the second round of signees for Boise State. Up next, we've got a sports update. What Boise State team is the latest Bronco one that's poised for a big year? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Leary Jewelers. Just in time for Christmas, Leary Jewelers is offering 5 years interest-free financing OAC, and the best part is no down payment required. It takes about 5 minutes to apply, so stop by Leary Jewelers today and check it out. Lee Reed, Idaho's Diamond Jeweler. Well, the Boise State gymnastics team will start the 2018 season the same place their 2017 season ended. That's ranked 13th in the latest preseason polls. It's the highest ranking in school history. The Broncos will open their season against number 24, Southern Utah, on January 11th.
Another championship. Let's get it. I'm calling it right now. Mountain Rim Gymnastics Conference champion. Let's hope they don't get robbed when it comes to seeding in the NCAA regional round like they did last year, where they were the 2 seed but had to go to the home of the 3 seed, which was totally unfair. The 3 seed got the advantage when the top 2 advanced. I'm still bitter about that. That's almost as bad as the basketball team having to play a neutral site game at Dayton against Dayton. So, yeah, that's a pretty difficult
Very
break.
Good comparison, and I think, you look at what the gymnastics program has been able to accomplish in the last, 6, 8, 10 years. Just the only thing they're missing is getting that finals, getting to the last 12. Mm-hmm. That would be huge. And again, as Chris said, last year's seeding wasn't kind.
Well, Boise State's Curtis Weaver was named to the freshman All-American team by USA Today. Weaver, who was the first freshman to name to the first team All-Mountain West, led all freshmen in the country with 9 sacks, led Boise State with 11 tackles for loss. In addition, Idaho freshman punter Cade Coffey from Rathdrum, Idaho, was also selected to the freshman All-American team by USA Today. He led all freshmen in punting average at 44.6 yards per punt.
Congratulations to Curtis. He and Jabril Frazier are going to need to introduce themselves to 6'6" quarterback Justin Herbert of Oregon. I'd like to see 3 sacks between the two of them.
All right, so Curtis Weaver, will he have more or less than 9 sacks next year?
Oh, I'd have to go with less, because I think they'll probably double-team him. And you look at David Mola's numbers this year to last year. I think sometimes when it's your first year to be kind of on the stage, I don't want to say it's easier, but it seems like it's easier. 9 sacks is a heck of a lot of sacks.
That is a lot, and that's the whole thing about it is, isn't that disappointing with defensive linemen? I don't know if we could say David Moa's season was significantly worse than the year before, although the numbers are drastically worse than the year before. I don't know how film guys could break it down and tell you why and why not, but for those of us who like easy to digest numbers,
it's not really
going to help us.
But how many guys blocked you? How many times did you get chipped by a running back or a tight end that didn't happen the year before? I think you're right. I think it will be very difficult to duplicate. 9 sacks is a heck of a lot of sacks.
Well, the Idaho Potato Commission has announced that they have agreed to a 5-year extension, meaning the naming rights for the famous Idaho Potato Bowl will remain through 2021. The Idaho Potato Commission has been the sponsor of the bowl ever since 2011.
And I look at the sponsor and bowl and think that this is just the perfect matchup for the name, the city, the place. I mean, how about some of these other bowls? I know what Gildan is. Most people probably don't. It's underwear. Oh. So they're the sponsor of the New Mexico Bowl.
We're talking underwear. Right. Nobody knows underwear like
I know what Zaxby's is. Do you know what Zaxby's is? It's a chicken finger place.
Yeah,
and they're a sponsor of the Heart of Dallas Bowl, but what does Zaxby's Chicken have to do with the Heart of Dallas? I don't know. The only ones I've been to are in Georgia. Maybe the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl works because Lockheed Martin has a lot of defense contracts, but I think the Potato Commission, having it be the Potato Bowl, and I think the best bowls are the ones that are fruit or some sort of agricultural crop. You know, you look at rose, you look at sugar, you look at cotton, you look at orange, you look at peach. I mean, all of those things to me kind of say college football bowl games. Good job on both parts.
All right, so now you've gotten the takes out of me for this. I have plenty of takes. Number one, Tostitos Fiesta Bowl was great.
It was.
That was fantastic. It shouldn't have ever changed to, like, was it Vizio now?
Is it well, still it was. Vizio? I don't know if it still is. Yeah. I think it's something else. But, okay. A lot of these go one or two years and then change. And how many years is the new deal with?
For the Potato Bowl?
Yeah.
5 years.
I mean, you have a lot of them that don't even go more than two.
Yeah, Tostitos for Fiesta, that was perfect. I loved it. But the best one is no longer in existence.
I think I know what Chris is going to say.
Yes. The Popeyes Bahamas Bowl. Come on, man. How can we mess this up? Nothing better than Popeyes and nothing better than going to the Bahamas around December. It was just the perfect match, and somehow we messed this up. Come on, man. The Popeyes Bahamas Bowl needs to come back tomorrow.
Well, speaking of coming back, it came back yesterday officially. Green Bay Packers sit at 7-6 with an outside shot of the playoffs. Last night, Aaron Rodgers announced that he has been medically cleared to play just 8 weeks after breaking his left collarbone. Packers went 3-5 with Brett Hundley at quarterback, needing an overtime win to beat the Cleveland Browns. Packers will travel to the Carolina Panthers, who are currently 9-4 and own the fifth seed in the NFC.
Yeah, it's, I guess, good and bad for the Packers. They have a very difficult schedule upcoming for the last three games, as if, like, there's a lot of games left. But, you kind of need those teams to lose anyway, so it's good that you're playing them because therefore you have a chance for you to get a win and them to get a loss by just one result of a game. So I guess it's, in a way, best-case scenario. And if you have Aaron Rodgers back, does anybody really want to face Aaron Rodgers in a one-game situation where you need to win? Probably not. Like, I'm serious, though. Like, would you rather face Aaron Rodgers in this Packers team or the Eagles right now?
Oh, well, the Aaron Rodgers because Carson Wentz is hurt.
I don't know if I'd say that. I think the Eagles have got a lot more going for them, minus the quarterback. I mean, I know Aaron Rodgers is somebody you don't want to see on the other side, but
Aaron Rodgers is that good, though. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, the Cavs could have nothing going on, but if they have LeBron James, I like their chances in a playoff series. And the Packers could have, like, last year, the Packers didn't really have much going on other than Aaron Rodgers was really good, and they got to the NFC Championship game.
They've got the Panthers, the Vikings, and I guess the Lions are somewhat of a contender for the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need a loss for the Vikings. You're probably going to need a loss for the Panthers if you're competing for the wild card. So I think at this stage, if you're the Packers, because you're on the outside looking in, I think you need to have a hard schedule. I think if you'd had the Bengals and the
AFC teams,
I think you wouldn't be helping yourself.
I would put them in a three-way tie for third, Chris, in teams I don't want to see right now. Patriots 1, Steelers 2. And a three-way tie between the Saints, Packers, and Seahawks.
So the whole NFC is basically number three.
Well, no, just those three teams. Just those
you can't
three
pick three?
Teams. Well, okay, then I would go Saints, Packers, Seahawks. 3, 4, 5.
Saints.
You think, okay.
Best team.
Today on December the 13th, are the Packers going to make the playoffs?
No. Because I don't think they can run
the table. They can't run that table.
They can't run the table, though. I think they will lose at least one of those games.
But Aaron Rodgers has done this before.
Yeah.
Like, they've been in this situation where they need to win out, and they've done it with much more than three games left. Like, they've done it with six. They need to win the last six games, and they've made the playoffs doing that. You know what?
I think the most important game for the NFC playoff picture this week is the Seahawks and the Rams. I think the Seahawks have to win.
You know what?
Make the playoffs.
The Seahawks could win. Well, is it better for the? I guess it's better for the Packers if the Rams win that.
Yes,
because if the Packers, I think, will win this week. I think Aaron Rodgers' return will have them beat Carolina. There'll be a game out with the Falcons and the
Depends
Saints.
Depends what the Falcons do. The Falcons lose, they'd be tied with the Falcons at 8-6.
And they already played each other this year. In who won that? That was like a Sunday night game. I think it was the Falcons won it because they were playing the NBC NBA on NBC Music. Yeah, it was the Falcons in that home, their first home game. So, yeah, it's a lot to overcome. I'm not picking them. I can't do it.
And the only way that they have a shot to win the division is the Vikings would have to lose all three games. And I don't think Minnesota's losing all three games.
Yeah,
they're not
going to
lose to Cincinnati and Chicago with the two loser teams being in Minnesota. So you're going to only get a wild card. You got to concede Minnesota to win the division. I think concede Minnesota to win the division. Headed out to Las Vegas for the game. Stop by the Hard Rock Casino and see Jeff Caves and me. We'll be doing some Idaho sports talk on the ticket live in the Peacock Lounge. Shows will be from 2 to 5 tomorrow. That's Pacific time. And also noon to 5 Pacific time on Friday. You can enter to win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel Suite, including dinner for two at MB Steakhouse and two VIP concert tickets. You must be present to win for the drawing Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time. There'll be plenty of other prizes, too. It's Idaho Sports Talk live from the Las Vegas Hard Rock Hotel and Casino tomorrow and Friday on your FM home for Boise State football, Sports Radio 93.1 FM, The Ticket. Coming up in Quick Hits, what was fun for Chris last night? And no, it wasn't going to the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl.
Man, I wish, though.
And what was the most unbelievable stat of the night? That's next when we come back on Quick Hits on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, what was really fun last night? You can take that answer in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I was just going to go to the NBA. I wasn't going to talk about anything else that would get us in trouble here. NBA was real fun last night. There were some good games. The ESPN game number one of their doubleheader might have been one of the more fun games. It's not involving any of these teams that are going to win a championship, and I think that's one of the fun things about the league right now. Like, there's teams that are intriguing and have storylines, even if it doesn't mean that they're going to win a title this year. Knicks and Lakers. Yes, Fish, LeVar Ball was doing LeVar Ball things, sitting right next to Spike Lee in the front row at the Garden. They were dapping each other up after every time Lonzo scored, and it didn't look like Spike Lee was always wanting to be a part of the dapping up with LeVar Ball. But you know, there is a third quarter, a stretch in this where there was all offense, no defense. These were just going up and down the court and scoring one after another. Lonzo got an alley-oop and threw it down with the right hand. Then Porzingis would hit an 18-footer. And then KCP would hit a three. Then Porzingis would hit a three. And then down the court, it was Brooke Lopez hitting a three. And then it was Michael Beasley hitting a runner. They were just going back and forth scoring. The Garden was in its full gardenness. You also heard the Oregon. It felt like the 90s in a way, right? Because it was everything that Madison Square Garden has to offer. In the end, though, the Knicks would it. In overtime, and I guess LeVar Ball was sad in the end. But Lonzo played well, 40 minutes, 6 of 13 shooting at 17 points, had 8 rebounds, had 6 assists. But, yo, Kristaps Porzingis, 37 points. He also had 11 rebounds, 5 blocks, and making 5 threes in the process. I read that he was, like, the first player ever to get 35-plus with more than 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, while making 5 three-pointers in the same game. So he is quite the talent. If only the Knicks had other guys to surround them with. The Lakers still really looking for that one A-list guy, although they are fun with all their young pieces. Also, yesterday, the Sixers and all their young players played terribly, but also beat the Timberwolves in overtime. Yeah, Kawhi Leonard playing his first game of the year after battling back from a quad injury. There's a lot going on in this league right now, even though we think the Warriors are really good and the Rockets are really good and they'll probably be in the Western Conference Finals. Cleveland and Boston will probably be in the Eastern Conference Finals. Don't let the results get in the way of the fun along the way.
Big wins, big games. I think Spike Lee doesn't like having somebody courtside that maybe is stealing some of his thunder and limelight.
Topic number two.
When you think of the Carson Wentz injury, what do you think of?
Well, I'm thinking of some Super Bowls past. One that was in the way the Eagles are going and one that was in the way the opposite way. For the 1990 season, Chris Sims broke his foot for the Giants. Excuse me, not Chris Sims. Phil Sims. Chris Sims wouldn't have been a problem. Phil Sims a
maybe
problem.
Chris Sims did
broken
get hurt
foot
that
year, in 1990. But Jeff Hostetler was the backup quarterback. Played the last two games of the regular season. That was the year the Bills missed the field goal with Norwood. 20-19, the Giants got the Super Bowl. They finished the year 13-3, although I do think the Giants have a better defense than what the Eagles put out on the field. They crushed the Bears with Hostetler in the playoffs 31-3. They won the NFC Championship by going to San Francisco and winning that game against the 49ers 15-13. They won the NFC Championship without scoring a touchdown. And then they won 20-19 over the Bills. So you can get it done with a backup quarterback. And then there was 72, just the opposite. Week 5, Bob Greasy broke his ankle for the Dolphins. They brought in almost 40-year-old Earl Morrill to be the backup quarterback. That team was stacked with Hall of Famers. 9 first-team All-Pros that year. Greasy didn't come back until the AFC Championship when he played part of the game. So it's kind of gone both ways. One Super Bowl champ where you lost your quarterback for most of the season. They were able to weather the storm. The quarterback came back. And in 1990, pretty much what the Eagles are trying to do, your quarterback gets hurt late and you somehow find a way to win it.
Yeah, how late was that again, though?
Week with 2 weeks left. Yeah. Hostetler started the last two.
So it's very similar to it. There's just so many other examples, though, of, you know, quarterback, franchise player getting hurt late in the year and the team just not being able to overcome it. And I just think the NFC is too competitive, and Carson Wentz is that good. Like, that's the other thing. Carson Wentz was that dude. You can't replace him with a below-average quarterback and expect to have the same output, because Carson Wentz was the best player in the game this year.
We've had, what, over 50 Super Bowls, and I came up with one example of a backup quarterback and one where the quarterback was hurt most of the season. The Packers are going to try to duplicate that, although they aren't close to being undefeated.
Topic number 3.
I don't have much time, so let me get this question for you. Mine's less important. What was the most unbelievable stat yesterday?
Well, the most unbelievable stat came from the Alabama election. It's reported by CNN that Nick Saban had over 19,000 write-in votes. Based on what CNN was saying yesterday, it sounds like he would be, quote, a credible candidate, which means he'd be over 30 years old and a legal resident of the state of Alabama. I'm wondering if any other coach in college football could garner nearly 20,000 write-in votes when they aren't even campaigning for the job. Tom Osborne, of course, went on to be a U.S. representative after winning 3 national titles at Nebraska, but almost 20,000 votes for Nick Saban. I wonder if they were from Auburn fans.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the Alabama election, though.
Up next, why tonight is big for Boise State basketball. When we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. When you win, the next game gets even bigger. That's usually the way things work. Tonight, I think, is the biggest game for Boise State basketball to this part of the season. And I think the biggest reason is you're playing a team that's 7-2 in Grand Canyon that has some things that they can do to make it difficult on you, especially at the defensive end. You have worked to put yourself in a position to receive votes. You're getting votes in both polls now. You have your best start since the 1988-89 season. You are going for your 4th straight perfect non-conference season at home. You've won 23 in a row dating back to the start of the 2014-2015 season. I say, Chris, tonight, it's a must-win against Grand Canyon. Most important game on the schedule, because everything you've worked for so far kind of slides out the door with a loss tonight.
You don't want to waste your goodwill that you've brought up. You have insurance to this point, but you don't want to have to, all right, start using that insurance money with this Grand Canyon game. Although Grand Canyon, like, I think you should be, you should kind of tell the story of who is Grand Canyon, because, you know, Dan Marley, head coach. Yep. I've seen the feature stories of what it's like at a home game at Grand Canyon.
They have sold,
absolutely bananas.
They have sold out season tickets for the year. They average between 6,000 and 7,000, which is what the place seats. The student section is bananas. It's called the Havoc. They are in their 4th season of Division I. They are in the WAC, which is the Island of Misfit Toys. They are picked first, and this will be their first road game of the season. But they've gotten it done at the defensive end. They're one of the top defensive teams so far. They're allowing 59 points a game, and they are making it very difficult to shoot the three, allowing just 27%. That's 11th best in the country. Boise State's been good against the three. They're the 10th best, just percentage points better than Grand Canyon. So Boise State tonight, we've seen them get a lot of threes. We've seen them make a lot of threes. We've seen them win home games by 20 points or more in their last 4 games. Tonight, of those home games, this is the 5th home game since Thanksgiving. Tonight will be the most difficult challenge. It'll also be the most important challenge.
Who have they played, Grand Canyon? Do you have that list?
Their wins are not a real stellar crowd. Again, mind you, they're at home, too. Florida A&M, Robert Morris, Arkansas Little Rock, Norfolk State, UC Riverside, Grambling, and North Carolina Central.
It sounds like Georgetown's schedule.
The 2 losses, home loss to San Diego, and then I guess technically a neutral site game. It was played at Talking Stick, the casino. but it was in Phoenix. St. John's came out from New York and beat them as well.
Okay. Well, San Diego's actually really good this year.
They are. They beat Colorado the other night.
Yeah, they're playing very well. And St. John's is always just, you know, St. John's, they're going to be a tough team. They're Big East, middle of the road. Last two seasons, 27-7, 22-9. Hey, this is not a joke of a team, and especially at home. When they're at home, they tend to win because of their crowd. Now, I think, was it next year Boise State goes to Grand Canyon?
Looking forward to that.
That will be fun. Your trip there, I can only imagine how unique it'll be, because it's not like you went to Kentucky recently within the last 4 years, right? You've gone to Michigan State recently within the last 4 or 5 years, however long it's been. It's not going to be like that with the historicness, but just the intimacy of the crowd and how nuts it'll be. I'm almost jealous of it. I think it would be a very fun atmosphere to call basketball games and to play in front of. Dan Majerle being a coach, that's also a unique thing. You have a former NBA guy and somebody who's really respected within basketball leading the way. They're a unique university in how it's structured anyway. So there are some odd things about this game.
Mention about that defense is their calling card. They have a player from last year's Oregon Final Four team with sort of a Boise State tie. TJ Benson was here as an ops person for a little while under Coach Rice. His brother is Casey, played for the Ducks last year and had that great year as a sophomore where he was about 5-1 assist to turnovers that season. Mm-hmm. And he is the point guard for the Lopes. And when you look at how the teams beat him, two things. Both losses, they've been outshot by the opposition. So a team that usually does a very good job of limiting what you're able to make. The two teams that beat him, San Diego and St. John's, both shot better from the floor than did Grand Canyon. And those were the only two games in which they had more turnovers than the opponent.
Fair. I can also, I'm not sure of this. You could tell me. But I don't think they would have anybody who can check Hutchison, right? Hutchison is going to be the standout player on the floor, correct?
I was just looking at size-wise, trying to figure out who might take in a man-to-man. I mean, you're looking at the backcourt. The three perimeter guys are 6'2", 6'4", 6'3".
Okay.
So Hutchison is listed at 6'7", and is more athletic probably than not having seen these guys on TV. I don't think I'm going to go out on a limb saying that Adu, Braun, and Benson, I've seen Benson on TV play before for Oregon, are not as athletic as Chandler Hutchison. Their inside guys go 6'6", 6'10". Now, if you put your 6'6 guy, Vernon, who's your four for Grand Canyon, on Hutchison and a man, well, then you're going to have, if the starting lineup is out there, Haney and Sengfelder, one of your small guys has to play one of them.
Mm. Yeah, I brought his name up, Chandler's, just because I don't know if a lot of people saw it, but Sports Illustrated did have a national feature on Chandler Hutchison. And you talk about somebody who came back so he could get more attention and he could show some of the things in his game that could make him a bigger NBA prospect than he would have been at the end of last season. These kind of things are exciting. The fact that Chandler Hutchison got a Sports Illustrated national profile where he's showing off Euro steps and open floor transition buckets that he got against Oregon. They're embedded in this story. Talking about him, his start to his career where he wasn't as productive as a player, didn't have the opportunity. Talked about how he spent his offseason lifting weights and working on his jumper and 600 jump shots at least before he was able to finish his workout. How Phil Beckner worked with him on his shot form, raising the shot up, keeping the elbow tight. Those type of things are pretty cool to see Boise State basketball nationally profiled, one of their individuals in a spot where, they're getting the attention to move up perhaps into the first round conversation in the NBA draft. That's unique.
Doesn't he look, Chandler I'm speaking of now, doesn't he look a little different? He looks so much thicker in the chest. He looks like he's playing, not that he didn't play with confidence last year, but the games I've seen, I think just the look in his eyes as he takes the ball to the basket and zooms by people, not that he didn't look confident last year, but I just think there's a different level, a different aura about him this year than he had last year.
I think part of it could be just the feedback he got from NBA people in the offseason and being able to be confident in what you're good at and know what you need to work on and then be excited to showcase that, hey, I have worked on these things. Let me show you while I play this game. And usually you think of it like if he's playing for individual reasons, and I'm not saying that he is. He definitely has team goals, and he says everything correctly in interviews, talks about the team. But, like, let's say he was individually motivated. The great thing about it is it meshes perfectly with the team goal. If he really wanted to highlight all of his weaknesses this year and showcase it to NBA people and draft experts and say, hey, I could do these things. I could shoot it. I have the ability to handle the ball a little bit more and work on my handle. I can build up my body in a way where I can defend all these different types of positions. NBA, if he can show the ability to shoot 40% from deep, I don't know, was he at like 30-something percent right now?
Right now he's 35%. But he hasn't taken that many. He's just 8 out of 23.
Yeah, the attempts, maybe they'll rise. That's the one thing you need to show.
But you have so many other people.
You can shoot threes. Like, how are you going to show your ability to shoot threes when your roster around you is supposed to shoot threes and you're supposed to be the creator, penetrator, collapse the defense?
Right. I don't think – you're going to see Jessup shoot the three. You're going to see, maybe a little bit of Sengfeld or a little bit of Williams. I mean, he's going to shoot it some.
Yeah.
But, boy, he could take so many guys off the dribble. I don't know why you wouldn't want to just drive by somebody.
It's funny, though, because his role in the NBA would be, all right, I'm going to defend twos, threes, fours, and be able to hit some threes if spot-up situations. That's the formula for him to be a late first round or a second round pick who gets the opportunity to showcase his usefulness for the NBA. But I do think, like, even more than James Webb, because Webb was starting from a much farther point back in three-point shooting, yet he is a pretty good three-point shooter right now in Delaware if you're paying attention to how he's doing with the Sixers G League team. But I do think Hutchinson at this point in his final year is a little bit ahead of where James Webb was from an NBA skill set standpoint at this point in James Webb's final year here.
I also think he looks thicker and stronger than James Webb's did, did here. Not to say James Webb was not good or whatever. I just think Hutchinson's that good. Again, Boise State playing tonight against Grand Canyon. Bob and Chris here talk a little Boise State basketball on Sports Radio The Ticket. Between us, we've seen all the games. A couple of the games overlap at home we both have seen. So I'm going to ask you the question on the games that you did on the road or at home when I wasn't here. If we were going to have a draft only of the people that played in the Boise State game and their opponent, is there anybody that you've seen that even caused you to pause that you might take them over Chandler? Because in the games I've seen, Chandler Hutchinson in anything where we're lining the guys up against the wall and I've got the first pick and you've got the second pick, I'm taking Chandler in every game I've done.
Iowa State has this guy named Nick Wheeler-Babb who's a point guard who's also like 6'5", and he can rebound, he can pass, he's pretty quick. He's the only guy.
So we're talking in 10 games, one guy, maybe.
Yeah, that's about it.
I wonder what we're going to say by the end of the season. Now, we're not seeing, the SEC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12 the rest of the way on the floor. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the guys from UNLV, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know who's Nevada got these days. Right. They're winning, but I don't know if anybody's going to be
less,
a standout.
Less than fingers on one hand, right, that we'll even debate.
He's a preseason player of the year in the Mountain West for a reason.
Yeah. And he's fun to watch. Fun to watch. And he'll go at it tonight against Grand Canyon. As I said, beginning of this segment, I think it's the biggest game so far. You've worked so hard. You're 9-1. You've got some great wins. You're moving your way up. This is one you got to get at home tonight, and hopefully we'll see a lot of you out there tonight helping get it done. Dave and Buster's this weekend for a couple of KTIK watch parties. Join JP on Saturday at 1:30. They'll be playing the Vegas Bowl with Boise State and Oregon. Then Sunday at 2, some NFL games highlighted by the Steelers and the Patriots. You can win prizes, great food and drink specials, and watch games with Boise State and NFL fans. All at Dave and Buster's on Milwaukee near the mall. Watch parties Saturday and Sunday with JP. When we come back, Fish, very disgruntled sports fan right now. Chris and I'll try to console him next when we come back on Sports Radio The Ticket. Baseball winter meetings going on. The Marlins, yesterday we talked about giving away, and I'll use the term giving away, Giancarlo Stanton for not much other than Starlin Castro, a couple of prospects, but I guess the biggest thing is the Yankees picked up the lion's share of the contract. Today, a guy who I thought was also very good, Marcell Ozuna, traded from the Marlins to the Cardinals for prospects. I'm hoping that since the Marlins gave the Cardinals something because the Cardinals were working out a deal, maybe Christian Yelich will be next to go, and he would look awfully good in the black and orange of the San Francisco Giants. So if you want to give him to us, Fish.
They're selling everything? They're selling everything.
They're selling everything.
They might their outfield like weird dolphin Marlin statue thing.
I think that is actually permanently in the ground, but Jeter might try to sell it.
No, I think the Phillies could use that. I think that would be really a cool addition.
I mean, at this point, they should make it run for visiting home runs because no one's going to hit a home run on this lineup.
But I guess my question, the greater story in this, pro team that you root for trades away somebody that you're just crushed or you think it's just an awful trade. I think Stanton would fall into that. Mm-hmm. Ozuna right behind it, maybe, would come close. Not as big as Stanton. But I'm trying to rack my brain over trades the Giants made, of which one I was most upset with, and I have one, and it ended up being a better trade for the Giants.
Oh.
I was very disappointed in 1996 when they traded Matt Williams. He was one of my favorite Giants. I really like Matt Williams. In the package, they got Jeff Kent, who went on to be an MVP. The Giants got the better of the trade. I had to eat my words. I thought it was a bad trade, but it ended up being a good trade. But I can't come up with anything in my fandom that even comes close to what you've had to endure.
I have a small inkling that neither of the guys they got for Giancarlo Stanton will win an MVP.
All right,
just an inkling.
208-424-9300. I'd be interested in a lot of other people's, like, all right, one move that your favorite team did that you just couldn't stand. So something that you just hated that your favorite team did. So with that in mind, I just wanted to lay out and let Fish go because he has just a lot of thoughts from what has happened over the last few days with his Marlins and Jeter. So the floor is Fish's.
Well, I think, Chris, I think you're onto something. At first, I was, you know, I thought Chris was maybe a little extreme. Talk about how Jeter is trading everything to the Yankees. I think, and I saw someone else say this, I think it was Scott Boras. I'm very sad I've gotten to the point where I agree with Scott Boras. Major League Baseball needs to basically have the owners lay out a plan. When you buy this team, what are you going to do with the team? Because I feel like if Rob Manfred said, okay, you're going to sell Stanton, you're going to sell Ozuna, you're going to sell D. Gordon, you're most likely going to sell Yelich, we're not going to let you buy this team. They're last in attendance anyway. No one's going to go to these games. I think the Major League Baseball, now I see there needs to be a process for owners. You need to say, what's the plan? But I'm done. I think I'm moving on my fandom. It's gone. I need a new team to root for. I'm going to start an art. I'm going to start a blog. Who should I root for in the Major League Baseball season? Because it is, as I told Bob yesterday, the Marlins will challenge the Mets for most losses in a year. Was it 122, Bob?
40 and 122, yeah. Or maybe 40 and 120, I'm thinking. Maybe they had a rain out or two. But they won 40.
Well, unfortunately, the Marlins, there's not going to be any rain outs at home.
They're playing that indoor stadium. No, but you got no party shot. You seem to be taking it pretty light on Jeter. You didn't call him
any names. No, I think he should be fired. I said this when they traded D. Gordon. I said this when they traded Stanton. And now I said this again. I'm trying to start the hashtag fire Jeter. He should be done. This is absolutely a joke. He should only have a job for the New York Yankees.
That's true.
Maybe he does.
He might at this point, but he's not going to the meetings, the baseball winter meetings. I don't know how he's trading Ozuna if he's not there. He should be done. He should be fired already.
There should be a rule. Like, if you reach a certain status within an organization, you can't work for a different one because it's an inherent conflict of interest.
I'm surprised Ozuna's not now on the Yankees, but I don't think they need another outfielder.
Okay, but we would obviously say that Don Mattingly is most known for the Yankees.
Yeah,
but he's managed now two teams. He's managed the Dodgers and he's managed the Marlins.
He doesn't have a final say in player decisions.
No, okay.
So maybe you can't be more than a manager, or you can't have a final say in trades if you work for another organization or won a championship.
Yeah, I just don't know what that standard would be, but we'd have to define that. So I'm with it. Out of all the things the Marlins have done, you've been a Marlins fan for how long?
This would be 14 years.
So how did you get traded with the Marlins? You didn't jump on the bandwagon one of the 2 years they won, did you?
In theory I did, but I jumped on the bandwagon for Dontrell Willis, and they happened to win that year. So it was an early season bandwagon.
Gotcha. But you've lived through the trading of Miguel Cabrera.
But there was hope. There was always hope. There's no hope now.
Because this is
because when they traded Miguel Cabrera, they still had, I believe, Brad Johnson was his name, or Josh Johnson, who was a Cy Young award-winning pitcher. They have nothing this year. They have absolutely nothing.
I mean, I'm looking at this list here, and here's your problem. Trying to figure out who's in charge. You got chairman and principal owner, Bruce Sherman, Chief Executive Officer Derek Jeter, President, I guess, Baseball Operations, whoever Michael Hill is, I guess he technically should be calling
should
the
be
shot.
Jonah Hill at this point.
Yeah. From his role from Moneyball?
Yeah, he might be a better owner just from that movie.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think what would even be close. I mean, the Marlins as a franchise have now been torn down. Now, this is when they're not coming off a World Series, but this is going to be the third time they're going to be torn down.
It's not fun. Like, I have to imagine, because I've never rooted for a team that I, like, fundamentally disagree with. Like, if I was a Redskins fan, for example, like, I fundamentally don't like their team name. So, like, I am fundamentally against what they are. If I was a fan of the Clippers, for example, I would be fundamentally against the owner, Donald Sterling, in the past. I don't see Ballmer. I don't really care about him. He's cool. But, like, could I like the Clippers, but hate the owner because their owner is A, cheap, B, racist? Like, I don't – there would be an inherent conflict there. You, for the Marlins, you just can't accept the fact that they're cheap, and you have a fundamental disagreement with how they operate business-wise.
It's not even that they're cheap. It's that they're cheaper than cheap because I put up with a cheap owner. They've somehow gone cheaper than the cheapest owner in baseball.
So you – like, it's a fundamental conflict of –
He's not putting a winning – yeah, because he's not – they're not trying to win. And there's not a plan like there was with the Astros or with the 76ers because they're going to come off a mid-level draft pick this year because they were 77 and 86. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to tank for at least 1 year to get a top pick. And none of their first-round picks from being in the middle of the pack have ever really hit because Stanton was a second-round pick. So there's just no hope. I need Steve Hinkie, Chris. Is he available?
Steve Hinkie might be. Sam Hinkie.
Sam Hinkie.
Sam Hinkie somewhere. I know you're mad and flustered and all. You got to get the tanking guy's name right, though. Sam Hinkie.
Well, maybe
he's hanging out.
Maybe he has a brother named Steve who works in baseball.
That's true. He might.
See, because Sam's more of a basketball guy.
He's hanging out in Silicon Valley right now, and I think he's a professor at Stanford. So what you need to do is get your people together.
Drop him a line.
Drop him a note. Call up the Stanford office and get him there. It's Florida.
I just don't think any group has ever taken over a team. And in what? When was it official? Yeah. 2 months?
Yeah, it's about 2 months.
Less than...
It was around October, right after the World Series finished.
Right after World Series. And done less, or done worse, however you want to look at it, than these guys.
Yeah, but it's Derek Jeter, so in general, the hierarchy of baseball writers aren't allowed to criticize him. Like, that's the other thing. Jeter's bought up too much goodwill to where it hurts. Because you can't criticize him.
See, my biggest fear,
just because you can play doesn't mean you can manage or GM or whatever.
My biggest fear is to lose 110 games. You'd be like, you know what? This was way too hard for me. I'm going to retire. I'm like, really?
If Derek's...
I could see him. If I, you know, I don't want to be associated with a losing team. I'm going to retire. It was fun. I'm like, oh,
he quits
no.
after 1 year.
Oh, no.
All right, so we'll draft it. We'll come up with, by the start of next baseball season, Fish's new team. Yep. Yet you continue to wear your Florida Marlins hat every day.
I know. I gotta
need a new wardrobe too with this.
Well, I'll go grab the Saints hat. They're winning.
All right.
So, fifth annual Idaho Potato Drop, and it's sponsored by the Idaho Potato Commission on New Year's Eve, and it's in Capitol Park in downtown Boise. Stay warm in the crystal clear Cumulus Radio VIP tent with gift bags, fresh, healthy cafe hors d'oeuvres, DJ Jet Rock, and performances from Off Center Dance. And it's all brought to you by Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, we've got a sports update. Why might the rest of Major League Baseball be rejoicing that Shohei Ohtani is an L.A. Angel? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Start the Ticket Sports Update with Boise State News. Boise State's Curtis Weaver was named to the Freshman All-American team by USA Today. Weaver, who was the first freshman to be named to the first team All-Mountain West, led all freshmen in the country with 9 sacks, led Boise State with 11 tackles for loss.
I feel like his season has gone under the radar. Like, for somebody who is a freshman, first season playing, to be first team All Mountain West, and as effective as he is on a game-in, game-out basis, like, there's a lot of great stories with Boise State. There's a lot of standout players, so it's hard to get to them all. But you know, Curtis Weaver's been a standout on a very good defense, and for somebody to be this young and be this good, that gets you really excited for what should be most of this defense coming back next year. Granted, the decision if Vander Esch wants to step to the next level after this year, and or if Gabe Perez is gone, he's one of the seniors. So most of this defense, though, is coming back.
All right, in the 2-deep, which for somebody that doesn't know, 2-deep is the projected starter, projected backup at each position. Here are your seniors on the defense. Starting group. 0. Second team seniors. Of course, Perez was listed as a starter until he got hurt. Second team seniors. Defensive line, Daniel Aualua. Safety, Cam Hartsfield. And that's it. So we're losing Perez and two other guys that are listed as seniors on the roster. Canijo is a freshman. Pierce is a sophomore. Nawahine is a sophomore. Horton's a junior. Avery Williams, redshirt freshman. Curtis Weaver, redshirt freshman. Frazier, junior. Moa, junior. Louie at nose guard, sophomore. Durant Miles, junior. Des Williams, redshirt freshman. And then you, whatever you got that's underneath that you don't see that's being redshirted that's going to be redshirt freshman next year. This defense is going to be loaded.
Yeah, they weren't supposed to be this good this year defensively. Like that was the thing, beginning of the year, our analysis. Well, we'll see what happens with the defense.
With all the new faces.
Yes. But the one thing that could hurt it is let's hope the coaching staff can stay intact.
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure that Andy Avalos and the rest of the staff can remain in place so that defense can build instead of having to learn something new.
And again, Van Der Esch is a junior, rising senior next year. I guess he could test the waters, look, but boy, this defense could be really good.
Well, Shohei Ohtani, who last week agreed to the deal with the LA Angels, according to a physical that was obtained by Yahoo Sports, has a first-degree sprain in the UCL, which can might lead to Tommy John surgery. In addition, it was reported that back in October, Ohtani received a PRP shot in his elbow, which is supposed to promote the healing. He also underwent ankle surgery in October to deal with a bone spur that had been bothering him since last spring training. And I have come up with a conspiracy that Ohtani knows his elbow will not last. So that is why he has demanded the team allow him to be a hitter, because he will eventually transition to becoming a hitter in Major League Baseball.
Well, if you do both, in theory, are you doubling your injury risk?
But it's only an elbow injury, and you rarely hear position players needing Tommy John surgery.
I think what Chris is saying is that you could have an injury on the bases, you could have an injury, you know, pitchers have a lot of shoulder injuries, elbow injuries. Yeah, I think he would. You're putting more wear and tear on your body. I would think you'd have a greater chance to be hurt the more you did.
Yeah, and I still don't know if this pitching and hitting thing at the same time is what's that new hotness. Like, I really do think that baseball players at this level are too good for you to think that you can spend time doing both and do both at a high above average elite level at this game. Like, all these guys spend all their time doing one thing, either hitting or pitching. And it's hard for them to be elite at that level. I'm supposed to think that somebody can split their time doing both and be elite at both. I just don't see it.
Well, we just got done making fun of the Miami Marlins. We weren't the only ones. While Scott Boras isn't mailing 75-page binders for his clients, he decided to step aside and take a shot at the Marlins. He called the team a pawn shop following their trades of D. Gordon, Giancarlo Stanton, and Marcell Ozuna. He went on to say he hopes Major League Baseball would screen the ownership. And said instead, you no longer have a jewelry store that's coveting diamonds. You're now a pawn shop that is trying to pay the rent on the building. But I think he's a little biased because he knows it means only 31 teams will be asking for his services next year.
I think pretty much right on target. And how about our postal grandpa coming in with a commercial tire text? He goes, because I said maybe the Giants, because they were ready to trade with the Marlins, maybe should be able to get some sort of a piece. And I was suggesting Christian Yelich because the Giants need another outfielder. He says, I think the Giants owed the Marlins. They did give us Rob Nen after one of their World Series wins. All right, so let's look at the three guys that the Marlins got in that trade and see maybe if it'll be similar. Maybe it won't even be as much as they got for Giancarlo Stanton. They traded him for Rob Nen. It was three people. Two guys never made the major leagues in the trade. Mick Pageler, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, and Mike Villano. They also traded a left-hand pitcher by the name of Joe Fontenot, who made it to the majors for 1 year for the Marlins in 1998. Went 0-7 for the Marlins. So they had two guys that didn't make it, and one guy that pitched 1 year, 0-7. 5 years that Nen was with the Giants, he saved 40, 37, 41, 45, and 43.
Now, I think this is going to even be compounded, this whole Marlin situation of them giving away Stanton to the Yankees, when the Orioles make their decision to trade Manny Machado. Because that's happening.
If the Orioles trade Manny Machado to the Yankees, it will be worse than the Marlins trading Giancarlo Stanton to the Yankees.
Why?
The Orioles are in their division. You don't do something to make your division better, your opponent better in the division for 10 years. The Marlins at least were wise enough to trade Stanton to the other league. That would be, the Orioles would be even dumber than the Marlins if they do that for a bag of balls.
From what I'm reading, this seems like it's something that could happen because the Yankees are one of the teams that fit the description of young pieces, young prospects to spare, along with the money that could re-sign Machado to a long-term deal because nobody's acquiring Machado for one season
and giving up the
prospects.
Sure. And that would mean he'd also play third base for them. I don't think he's moving Gregorius off a shortstop.
Correct. So you play third with that lineup. My God. And then you talk about the have and the have-nots. We're going to have that whole discussion again if this happens. And again, I think it will. Like, just reading around and...
Come on, Orioles. Orioles. They're in your division. Don't make that trade.
They don't want to lose them for zip. They seem to be dead set against it. Yankees got the most to offer.
So if they do acquire Machado, will we see a higher number of different teams representing the Western Conference in the NBA for the next 5 years, or teams representing the AL in the World Series?
I think AL, the World Series, will have more various because it's still baseball. Mm-hmm. Like, baseball still, you never know what could happen in that game, in a 5-game, in a 7-game series. There's so much.
And you get the wrong two or three people, and I think baseball has more of a chance pitchers will get hurt, shoulder problems or things. I agree with you. I think baseball, much greater variance on who might win 1 year or the next than basketball.
Well, going to the NFL, the Green Bay Packers sit at 7-6. They have an outside shot at the playoffs, but that shot just got a whole lot better. His quarterback Aaron Rodgers announced that he has been medically cleared to play just 8 weeks after breaking his left collarbone. Packers will travel to the Carolina Panthers, who currently sit at 9-4 and then the number 5 seed in the NFC this weekend.
Did he say relax at his press conference? Relax, I'm back.
It wasn't even a press conference. He posted an inspirational Instagram photo of him on the surgery table.
See, this is what this show does to you. I was, earlier in the show, I was filling out the playoff machine that they have online where you can pick all the games and you figure out, okay, based on this, who's going to be in the playoffs. I was almost done. I was like on week 16 and week 17. And then I realized we had more show to do, so I had to start prepping for the rest of the show. And I can't multitask very well. Like, when I'm locked into the show, I get locked in. When I started doing the playoff machine, then Quick Hit showed up, and it's like, oh, wait, I got to talk to Bob for a minute here. And then I closed out the window, and I got distracted, and it all went away. I was going to solve the mystery of the NFL the rest of the year and tell you who would make the playoffs, but I guess I'll have to just wait for later in the week.
I will mention, we did look at their schedule. The Falcons will only head-to-head over the Packers. They beat them, but the Packers will have head-to-head wins over the Seahawks and Cowboys. So those are the teams to keep in mind. And a Panthers loss means the Saints almost clinched the division. So that's all I care about.
Can we have like an 8-way tie? What is the most chaotic?
I think we get like a 4-way tie.
Situation. I'm rooting for chaos.
No, don't root for chaos.
Can we have like a playoff where it's one team? What was the playoff in Idaho recently within the last couple years for high school where like one team had to play defense and the other team played offense? I don't know. It was like really complicated 3-team tiebreaker. I forget how they settled that.
Settled with a coin flip.
They had a coin flip.
They had a coin flip this year.
But it was a couple of years ago. There was a strange. Somebody can help me fill in the gap here. We did a whole thing on the show about it, and I don't remember it. Dang, that's frustrating.
At least you're remembering some of it. I'm not remembering any of it.
There was a high school. It was a high school. Like three teams were in a tiebreaker, and they had to all go to the same field. And it was like,
did they all play against each other like a half?
I forget what it was. But, all right, I'll look this up.
Somebody's probably listening to it. Probably call us and tell
us.
You should have remembered.
284-249-9300. Please fill in the gaps.
Headed down to Las Vegas for the game. Stop by the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino and see Caves and myself doing Idaho Sports Talk on the ticket live from the Peacock Lounge. Shows are from 2 to 5 tomorrow afternoon. Caves will be there then. And then I'll get going from noon to 2. Caves will follow from 2 to 5. Again, all that specific time on Friday. You can enter to win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel Suite, including dinner for 2 at MB Steakhouse and 2 VIP concert tickets. Got to be present to win Friday afternoon at 4 Pacific. Other prizes will be available as well. Idaho Sports Talk live from the Las Vegas Hard Rock Hotel and Casino tomorrow and Friday on your FM home for Boise State Football Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, The Ticket. When we come back, we'll take a little bit of look at Boise State and Oregon. No, not in the game on Saturday, but moving forward for the next several years. Who's more poised to have better records? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Join Caves and Prater at Dave and Buster's. They'll be there a week from today. That's Wednesday the 20th from 3 to 6 for a special Boise State Football Letter of Intent Day show. It's the Early Commits Edition. Come on down and listen to the recruits who commit early. Be interviewed with hardcore Bronco fans. It's food and drink specials, prizes as well. 21st Annual Letter of Intent Day special show. Again, a recruiting tradition. So I'm going to call this one 21A because I'm sure we'll do one again in February that we will call 21B. Chris, you've got the story on that high school playoff, a three-way tie with local schools, really quite convoluted.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm the only one who remembered this on this show because we did something on it. But it was Nampa, Timberline, and Bora, apparently. Three teams had a three-way tie in 2014. They're looking for the final spot in the playoffs. So it was a what they called a Kansas City tiebreaker. This is according to the Idaho Press website. There was a tie with each team having a 2-3 record in Pot A. So the format was similar to college overtime, but each team got a possession that started at the 40-yard line instead of the 25. The game was to continue until there was a winner, and if one team went 2-0 against the other teams, they would win that spot in the state tournament. If the team split all three segments or games, the round-robin format would start over. So they do it again.
So Timberline played Bora on a overtime game where they gave both teams
Nampa the ball. Opened up against Timberline.
Okay.
And Nampa opened up with the win, a 49. Opened up with Timberline. No, I'm sorry. I don't know if this is the recap or the preview story, so okay. I can't.
But
delve into
they
that.
Played, and then Team A played B, and then one of them played C, and then whichever one didn't play C played C the next game. Mm. And if somebody went 2-0, they advanced.
Correct. And
if somebody went 0-2, but the other ones went 1-1, they were eliminated.
I don't know.
I would assume, right?
Maybe.
Can seem be, right?
We got a caller, and all he told me is Bora ended up winning. He said Bora lost.
We were more interested in the how than the. Than
he
the...
said Bora lost to Timberline and then played them both again and won. So I think they must have all somehow split, and then Bora ended up running the table when it reset.
But I mean, I would think that if we'll use the three of us as an example, if both of you beat me, then I would be out.
You would think.
I would think. And then you two would play one game for the win.
Then
right?
Again, with this kind of tiebreaker, I have no hope that they – I think they've just thrown logic out the window.
Maybe they did.
I think the NFL should take this immediately. Imagine the ratings for a three-way tiebreaker. Make them play more dangerous football for our entertainment. And don't pay them any extra because that's how we like our sports. And, let's not do that.
We can make it flag football.
What do they – like baseball, I know they have shares at the end of the World Series, and it's worth, I don't know, $600,000 or $500,000 or $100,000, whatever it's worth. What do you get extra if you go all the way to the Super Bowl?
Pat on the back.
There's got to be something, right? There's got to be so much per.
Yeah, it's a certain amount of money.
I think it's not. It's not great.
No, I think it's less than a normal game check.
I haven't heard any NFL stories of like some guy missing out on their playoff. Like you know how Rajon Rondo didn't get like the Mavericks playoff bonus for the you know the team pool for advancing.
Oh, where they didn't vote for him.
Yeah. He didn't get any of that money. I don't remember any football story about that.
But how about this? The winners get last year Falcons Patriots. The difference was $54,000 a man. The winners got $107,000 for the game. The losers got $53,000. As you say, that's less than a regular game check.
All right, yeah. So here I've got the numbers here. If you win the wild card in a division round, you get $25,000, and then you get $46,000 for winning the conference championship.
Okay, not bad.
And you get another $107,000 to win the Super Bowl, it says here.
Well, this was a couple years ago. You got $102,000 for winning Super Bowl, $51,000 for losing.
It's gone up a couple thousand. That's it over the last couple of years.
Inflation doesn't exactly work for playoff bonuses. Maybe at a certain point you get that free trip to Disney World. Does that make up for it if you're the Super Bowl MVP?
But only one guy gets that.
Hey, that one guy though, he came out ahead on this story. Yeah, I've tried to skip through this article during the break. Bora did win it. It took a while. It took a while for this three-way tiebreaker. Apparently, there's a lot of matchups with it. But imagine if you had, like, the Packers, the Saints, and the Panthers in a three-way tiebreaker where they're basically playing college overtime, which I actually don't like. But they're playing college overtime rules from the 40, one versus the other, then them versus them, and then them versus them again if it's everybody tied one apiece. That would be a ratings bonanza.
Speaking of the Kansas City playoff, we got a caller. It's impossible for two teams to go 1-1 and the other team to go 0-2.
That's what I was thinking.
Because if Team A and Team B both beat Team C,
somebody would have to win.
Bob and I would be meeting at 1-0.
Yeah.
And then Bob and I would be playing.
Yeah, that's
in the
right.
Window.
It would be impossible. Yeah. But so I could go 2-0.
Yeah, and then
it's
then
you guys would have to play, and it wouldn't go another round. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it is impossible. So no one gets eliminated 0-2. 2-0, you win.
Because somebody would have to be 2-0. Yeah.
I love that our audience makes a lot more sense than us. They're a lot smarter. When we try to do math on the radio,
I'm thinking, I know I can lose 2 and be eliminated, but I forgot that you guys
you're
would
losing
have
it to the other people. So
this is clear. We need this in the NFL because no player would understand it. Like, wait,
Donovan McNabb
doesn't
even know the game could end in a tie.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine if he said this to him. He'd be like, oh, man. Like, wait, Donovan McNabb probably shouldn't mention his name right now. He's kind of in trouble with a lot of other NFL network guys. But, yeah.
Nope, Chris, you've won. You've won the day. This is what we need in football. We should bring this to college football, too. Have the committee. All right, well, there's a three-way tie, Ohio State, UCF, and Alabama. Put them on the field.
That's what they should have did between Boise State and Fresno State to figure out who hosted the Mountain West Championship
game. There's not a third team.
Play it right after the game.
Put San Diego State. I don't care. I just want them in it, too. I want to see this. It'll be fun.
We should have gone to that thing that night. We missed it.
How many Boise State, like, they would have gotten to the Mountain West Championship game one of those years, right?
Well, last year was a three-way tie, they, you know, instead of breaking it. Yeah. I'll be heading to Vegas tomorrow. Chris, you guys will have to hold down the fort. Caves and Prater. Actually, it's Tom Scott and Prater. Caves heading to Vegas now. Stay tuned. More Idaho Sports Talk next.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM. The Ticket.